Tributes paid as ex-cathedral dean dies. Tributes have been paid following the sudden death of a former dean of Winchester. Michael Till, who was 77, was dean of the cathedral from 1996 to 2005, succeeding Trevor Beeson. During his time, the girls' choir was formed and the deanery garden opened to the public. Before coming to Winchester, Mr. Till had been Archdeacon of Canterbury. On retiring, Mr. Till moved to Petworth in West Sussex. His funeral was held in Winchester Cathedral today, that's Friday. The current dean, the very Reverend James Atwell, said, "It was with great sadness that the cathedral community heard of the death of Michael Till. His was a distinguished ministry, which included building up the cathedral's community links. As Michael's successor, I greatly appreciated having that foundation to build on. Our thoughts and prayers are very much with Tessa and the family at this time." The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, said, "I am very sad to have learned of the death of Dean Emeritus Michael Till. Our thoughts and prayers are with Tessa and the family at this time, as we also give thanks for Michael's life and loyal ministry here in the cathedral and in the Diocese of Winchester. Mr. Till, on his retirement in a service in a packed cathedral, said, 'No one is a triumph and no one is a disaster. We are put together to get on as best we may. It's all pilgrimage. I have had a wonderful time here and want to thank you for the privilege of your company.'"
And Claire will give us the story behind the first headline, please. Thank you.
Bid to move maternity services would be opposed. There would be vigorous opposition to moving consultant-led maternity care from Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, the chairman of a key forum has warned. Mindy Noble, chairman of North Hampshire Maternity Services Liaison Committee, which includes health managers and service users, fears shifting services to the planned £70 million hospital north of Winchester would be a backward step in normalising births if women have their first baby at the new critical treatment hospital. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals, plans to treat strokes, heart attacks and major trauma patients at the emergency hospital, which will have consultants on site 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Most patients will arrive by blue light ambulance or helicopter. As revealed in last week's Chronicle, medical chiefs are also considering creating a centralised obstetric unit for women with high-risk pregnancies, which could also include paediatric intensive care and special care baby unit. This means maternity services at the RHCH and Basingstoke Hospital could be downsized to midwife-led units for natural, straightforward births only, while women who choose or need more medical care would go to the new emergency hospital. Ms. Noble said, "I feel that service users and their families in Winchester would vigorously oppose the removal of obstetric services from Winchester, but that is just my personal opinion." She added, "If there were to be only midwife-led services at Winchester and Basingstoke, I would be particularly concerned about women with first pregnancies, as there is a higher transfer rate to hospital for these women. I would be worried that all women would be directed to the acute centre for their first baby, and that birthing at a critical treatment centre seems a backward step in keeping births normal." The mother of three said co-located birth centres or midwife-led units in the grounds of hospitals were popular as they made transfer to consultant-led maternity wards easier if there were complications. Ms. Noble said she would like to see this option explored as part of the shake-up of maternity services and called for more consultation with local women and service users. Any major changes to services have to go out for public consultation and be approved by councillors on the County Council's Health and Overview Scrutiny Committee. Trust chiefs have refused to confirm or deny the maternity ward at the RHCH could be downsized to a midwife-led unit under the proposals. A spokesman said, "We want women and their families to have greater choice, and any plans will be informed by the people who use our maternity services."
And thank you for those headline stories. And now we'll go on to our regular features. We'll begin with death notices and then Christian comment, which will be followed by letters to the editor. And we have 12 this week. Historical items, your say, chronicle comment and first person. But first, let's give the death notices for this week ending Friday the 14th of December. Bell. Valerie Esme Amore Bell, peacefully on the 9th of December.
Koska, Thomas David Koska, Tom, in hospital, 3rd December, aged 77.
Croucher, George Croucher, peacefully, 6th of December, aged 88.
Day, Frederick Walter Day, 8th of December, aged 90.
Evans, William Anthony Evans, Major RAPC, MBE, peacefully on the 9th of December, aged 95.
Ford, Elizabeth Ann Ford, peacefully 30th of November, aged 72.
Kingdon, John Kingdon, peacefully, 6th of December, aged 94.
Mackay, Callum James Woods Mackay, 3rd of December, aged 34.
Meredith, Harry Meredith, 6th of December, aged 92.
Mousley, Stephen James Mousley, in Poole Hospital, 29th November.
Richardson, Jack Harold Richardson, 28th of November, aged 90.
Sanderson, Colin Sanderson, peacefully, 2nd of December, aged 87.
Sherfield, Mavis Sherfield, suddenly, 4th of December, aged 85.
Skelcher, Daphne Vera Skelcher, nay Belgian, Belshin, I beg your pardon, 10th December.
Wakeford, Gordon Frank Victor Wakeford, peacefully 4th of December, aged 93.
Westcott, Rose Westcott, 3rd of November.
White, Wilfred Alec White, peacefully 5th of December, aged 96.
Yates, Charles Frank Yates, suddenly, 7th December, aged 62.
Yates, Myra Jean Yates, no relationship to Charles Frank Yates is indicated, 4th of December, aged 88.
And now we have Christian comment, and it's going to be read for us by Claire, please.
And the title today is Change Something This Christmas, and is written by Rosemary A. Baker. How often have you said something that you regretted the moment you finished saying it? Usually, when we regret what we said, it was done when we were angry or hurt or upset. Written words are perhaps less often regretted, as we usually spend more time thinking about what we want to say, and then there is a delay before posting to reconsider. Sending texts and emails has speeded up this process, and the risk. I once sent an email saying someone was a slimy toad and copied it to him by mistake. It took a lot of grovelling and embarrassment to get over. The news this week has been full of the tragic death of the nurse involved in taking the hoax phone call to the private hospital caring for the Duchess of Cambridge. The broadcasters involved have themselves been the subject of a media backlash and have been receiving psychological help. They have appeared on television and tearfully apologised, saying they meant no malice. The responsibility, of course, is not theirs alone. How many journalists and broadcasters give any thought at all to the effects their words might have on their readers and listeners? Some, of course, are intended to have effect, so I suppose my question should be unintended effects. Words are powerful, but not only in the harm they can cause. They can, of course, be equally powerful in the good that they can do. Words of praise and encouragement can make all the difference. Words can offer hope. They can offer forgiveness and reconciliation. Words can change situations, both on a personal level and on a much larger, even global scale. There are times of great tragedy and grief when the spoken or written word seems totally inadequate, let alone impossibly difficult to say or write. At these times, the words themselves are unimportant. It is our intention to be alongside the suffering and the unspoken words that can be supportive. The Christian Church is about to celebrate the third week of Advent, the time when we prepare for the coming of the Christ child at Christmas. In the prologue of John's Gospel, which is always the last reading at the traditional festival of lessons and carols, we are told that Jesus is the Word, made flesh, God incarnate. This period also affords the opportunity of writing or sending cards to those with whom we don't have much contact, or of speaking to people we wouldn't normally converse with. Actions also sometimes speak as loud or louder than words. Let's see if this Christmas season our words and actions can create change somewhere for some people, however small. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
And now we can move to letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with Robin, please.
Merger of Trusts Offers More Choice is the title of a letter written by Mindy Noble, chairperson of the North Hampshire Maternity Services Liaison Committee. Maternity services at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. North Hampshire has a well-established service user committee that works closely with the senior teams at Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke. The committee is currently supported financially by NHS Hampshire, and we have had indication that the new GP commissioning groups will continue to give us financial support after March 2013. Any new parent we would like to any parent who would like to shape the future of our maternity service is encouraged to get in touch to join the group. We always have a creche at meetings for older children. Babes in arms are welcome, and a friendly and welcoming atmosphere. To give an idea of the work we do, we are working with staff on new designs for the low-risk birth rooms at Winchester and inputting to new patient information leaflets for the newly reopened maternity centre at Andover. I feel that the merger of the two trusts in North Hampshire will ensure greater choice for women across the area, and I look forward to continuing to work closely with the NHS staff. If you would like to get more involved, you can email me on northhantsmslc@live.co.uk or telephone 077-3345-6671. I'll repeat that. 077-3345-6671. Mindy Noble, Chairperson, North Hampshire Maternity Services Liaison Committee.
The second letter this week comes from Robert Jackson and is entitled Speed Cameras for Income, Not Safety. Your article on new speed cameras in the Chronicle, December 6th, was revealing. The comment that the speed spike system could have generated more than £15,000 confirmed what most people have believed for a long time, namely that speed cameras are there for income rather than safety. If your article had told us how many injuries could have been prevented or lives saved, it would have had much more credibility. Mobile cameras are often placed where there are few safety issues, but where it is easy to catch those over the limit. I'm not excusing speeders, but let's not waste any more money until it can be proved there is a genuine safety issue. Robert Jackson, Ashbourne Crescent, Badger Farm.
Committed to safeguarding maternity services in Winchester. Sir, in response to the article in the Hampshire Chronicle on December the 6th, we write to emphasise Hampshire Hospital's commitment to maternity care at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The press suggests decisions have been made, but we wish to stress that this is not the case and that any discussions are at an early stage. As clinicians, we believe in providing a high-quality service to families living in Winchester and the wider Hampshire catchment area. Our focus is on how we can achieve this, and we accept this might mean changing the way we deliver care in the future. We want women and their families to have greater choice with local care provided within 24/7 enhanced maternity centres. Here, midwives and obstetricians could offer antenatal and postnatal care and promote home and domino births where it is clinically appropriate. The domino provision supports women with low-risk pregnancies to be assessed at home in early labour before deciding where to have their baby. The midwife then offers continuity of care during a home or local maternity centre birth. A centralised specialist obstetric and paediatric unit could provide consultants 24/7, as well as all the supporting acute specialist services, such as intensive care, which is of the utmost importance for high-risk pregnancies. We do appreciate that many women with low-risk pregnancies may want or need to access this central service, and this too is being explored. We wish to stress that any plans will be informed by those who use our services. Some discussions have already taken place with the Maternity Services Liaison Committee, and we will continue to involve as many users as possible in our plans as they evolve. We are committed to improving care and securing the future of maternity services in Winchester, in Andover and in Basingstoke, and we are clear that any plans we develop must achieve this. And this letter is from Miss Claire Ifland, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist, clinical director for women's health, and Mrs. Caroline Brunt, associate director of midwifery and women's health, Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. And the Hampshire Chronicle editor's reply: in our report, the Hampshire Chronicle made it absolutely clear that maternity services were under review and that no decisions have yet been made.
In the next letter, Mrs. G. Chambers of Andover claims, "Salisbury puts one over Winchester." You ask, "Why would I visit Salisbury's Christmas market?" Chronicle, November the 29th. Yes, yes, yes. Why? Excellent park and ride at all points of entry into the city, and it's free. With a bus pass, the fare is also free. I lived in Winchester for years before moving, and always thought of it as my shopping home. But to travel there now is a nightmare. The snarl up on City Road, then high car parking fees, or an extra 6 to 8 miles to use park and ride is not conducive to a good experience. I find Bid's comments on who started the first Christmas market to be extremely childish. Wasn't it the Germans? And whether or not it brings in thousands of coach parties is of little consequence, because those tourists will go to a different venue next year. More hot air and marketing from Bid to the city fathers to provide P&R facilities for those living to the north and west of Winchester, and who would be regular customers, would be more beneficial. Until then, I will continue to shop in Salisbury. Mrs. G. Chambers, Burnham's Close, Andover. P.S. Salisbury's Christmas market is held in the market square outside the Guild Hall, not desecrating the cathedral grounds.
This letter is from Peter Moore. Time politicians grasped the nettle. Figures just announced tell us that the population of England and Wales increased by 3.7 million over the 10 years to 2011. That's more than twice the population of Hampshire in a decade, the largest increase since the census started in 1801. The figures are boosted by migration, the announcement says. Our elected representatives must surely grasp the nettle and campaign for zero net migration and encourage two-child families. Peter Moore, Alison Way, Winchester.
Jenny Coward's letter, which is headed Black Marks for Blue Star Line, and says, "Ever noticed that those who praise the bus service neither have to pay nor have time constraints? I'm glad Jeff Smith, letters December the 6th, is enjoying his bus pass and personalised service and even knows his driver by name. He's very lucky the driver speaks. 5 years ago, I bought a student daughter a yearly pass on Stagecoach to attend Peter Simmons College at a cost of about £1 a day, or £365 paid in advance. A month later, we moved house, which meant she needed the Blue Star Line bus number one. I had to pay a further £400 for a Blue Star pass, as there was no refund available from Stagecoach. Blue Star is far inferior. Many times the bus was so late I took her to college myself or to the train, and we gave the pass up as a bad job. My next daughter was reduced to tears and even forced off with inadequate fare as she when she was only 14 or 15. She then carried a photocopy of her passport, as Blue Star drivers repeatedly insisted she pay adult fare. I myself have been caught out by the outrageous £3.70 single fare from the city or St Cross to Poles Lane, Otterbourne. Once I had £3.60 only, and a kind student gave me the 10p when the driver told me to alight. Another day, I had to pay £5 for the same ride and accept that no change is given. Those that pay the extortionate fares are subsidising free riders. I have been on a bus when they audited the paying customers, and I was the only one. The E2 service is very infrequent, and I only use the Blue Star bus if I don't have my car. The East Park and Ride service, however, is great. My son goes to Simmons next year, but you can bet your bottom dollar I won't be buying a pass on Blue Star. Jenny Coward, Norlands Drive, Otterbourne.
And David Selby of South Wanston says PCC costs should be open to scrutiny. I must apologise for making the wild suggestion in my earlier letter about the need for police and crime commissioners, that they could cost the taxpayer at least £250,000. On the basis of information in the national press, I was wildly out. It appears the cost of Northampton's PCC is likely to be nearer £500,000, as he has appointed four assistants at £65,000 each, some of whom, allegedly, are the supporters who helped get him elected. I hope the costs of our PCC will also be open to public scrutiny, as it is our money he's spending on a mandate few people saw and even fewer voted for. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Vera Bruti asks, traffic congestion or air pollution? The City Council say they are taking steps to reduce air pollution with new cycling and car parking facilities, and that they have a programme of improvements ready for the coming year. For these to be so desperately needed now, before building on Barton Farm is even started, is really confusing. I always thought the main reason for encouraging people to use alternative transport was because of increased traffic congestion and little to do with increased air pollution. I've heard it said Barton Farm will swallow its own smoke, although I've always found that difficult to believe. George Hayter, in First Person in the Chronicle December the 6th, calls life in Winchester an uphill struggle because there seem to be hills to climb everywhere. The town is in the valley of the Itchen, hemmed in by downs on both sides. This is exactly why I've always thought cycling and walking into Winchester would only ever be first choice for a small minority. People in the suburbs going into town to do a lot of shopping are far more likely to use their car, the bus or taxi. It may be possible to cut down traffic by using bikes or walking, but unlikely from the new suburb. I remain to be convinced otherwise. Vera Bruti, Manningford Close, Winchester.
Another letter on the pollution problem. This one is headed, Move the monitor to quieter location. Sir, I have a simple answer to Winchester's so-called pollution problem. At present, this is measured in St George's Street. This is a ridiculous position. Not only is there constant traffic, but buses are accelerating, having just come from the bus station with perhaps cold engines. The area is in a canyon of tall buildings and on calm days the fumes build up. My simple solution is to move the monitoring to a much quieter location with fewer cars. The climate change people would return to the horse and cart days, which would be good for rhubarb. But horses have exhaust gases too. Peter Mitchell, Drove Lane, Alsford.
And on a similar subject, Chris Gillam of Winchester says, mad Ponzi scheme commitments. Whether we like the look of wind turbines or not, the fact is that Western society must massively and rapidly reduce the fossil carbon content of its activity. If our local politicians and MP are to eschew the contribution of wind power, then they must come up with equivalent commitment to the reduction of carbon elsewhere. If we can't decarbonise our power supplies, and we can't easily retrofit major power-saving measures to our existing housing, from what part of our activity are we to make the necessary changes to meet even our very short-term commitments? If we are to decarbonise by just 30% and are not to have a major contribution from renewable energy, we must look at equivalent sacrifice. Unless we get the savings from industry and agriculture, this requirement itself would mean cutting transport emissions to zero. Will the politicians take all the cars off the road and close all the airports? Of course not. The trouble is that local politicians take their lead from a profoundly anti-environmental central government. Our elected Prime Minister postures on climate responsibility, photographed with huskies in Lapland, while de facto PM George Osborne, in ludicrous pursuit of unattainable economic growth at all costs, pours money into increasing our oil dependence and carbon profligacy by building roads through lovely places, planning airport expansion and constructing gas power stations, and even pumping money into the highly risky and dirty technology of shale gas. These mad Ponzi scheme commitments, Osborne calls them investments, to dangerous dependency on dwindling resources come from the man who talks about fiscal responsibility. Economy and ecology have the same etymology and are about sustaining the household. Balancing the environmental account is far more fundamental than the fatuous calculations of the Treasury. The money economy is meaningless in a world that can no longer sustain a human population. Those who govern us should set us an example. At Westminster, the castle, or the Guild Hall. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
This letter from Bob Whitmarsh is closely related and is entitled Renewable Energy is Needed Now. Douglas Paterson, in the letters of November the 29th, appears unaware of the urgent need to cut greenhouse gas emissions now. Mankind is in a fix. The UK needs renewable sources of electricity that can be installed immediately. Global greenhouse gas emissions have doubled since 1980 and show no sign of abating. Recently, PricewaterhouseCoopers stated that the hope of keeping below a global 2 degrees centigrade rise is highly unrealistic. And the World Bank said a rise of more than 2 degrees centigrade by 2100 was increasingly likely. We cannot rely on research that may take decades to provide valuable technologies. Gas is not a practical alternative to coal in the long term either. It too is a fossil fuel and emits at least 20 times more CO2 per kilowatt than wind turbines. and coal emits almost 40 times. Solar and wind power are obvious candidates, possibly underpinned by nuclear. It is not true that the Didcot A coal-fired power station generates 200 times more electricity than the proposed Bullington Cross wind farm. The correct 2007 to 2011 figure was about 90 times. The UK needs to build a mix of renewable sources of energy. Hampshire's citizens should play their part in providing such renewables and not reject wind turbines. The variability of wind is rarely significant if wind turbines are distributed throughout the UK. Onshore wind is a partial and maybe stopgap solution until better technologies present themselves. The impact on the countryside does not have to be permanent because wind turbines can be removed without leaving a lasting scar. Of course, the UK can also use less energy and do so more efficiently. Individuals can make important personal contributions. Bob Whitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
Valerie Gowan's letter is headed A is for accident waiting to happen. Sir, in Winchester city centre today, I was appalled at all the A boards in the high street. The worst offenders were up by Lloyd's TSB. A good number were just left there. Some businesses in St Thomas's Street even have them in the road. This is an accident waiting to happen. So why are you allowing this, Winchester City Council? I remind you that this is an offence, as you all well know, and if somebody injures themselves on one, I hope they sue you. Merry Christmas and goodwill to everybody. Valerie Garnes, Palace Close, King Somborne.
Thank you very much, and those are our letters to the editors for this week. May I just remind you that if you'd like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can ring 01962 860 836. I'll say that again, 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That is lowercase in all cases here, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. You could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're on to historical items, and I'll set the ball rolling with 200 years ago, 1812. On Tuesday, George Lentz and H. Knight were examined at Marlborough Street on charges of fraud. It appeared that they rented apartments at 4 guineas a week, representing themselves as having just left college and belonging to families of distinction. With their gentlemanly deportment, all the tailors, bootmakers, jewellers, etc. in the neighbourhood became dupes to their artifice. The charges were too numerous to enter, and they were remanded till a further date. And another item. Monday, a curious marriage took place at the parish church of St. Margaret, Westminster, between a couple whose united ages make 150 years, the bride being 80 and the bridegroom 76. They had a courtship of 40 years and had never come to a determination of having the marriage rites performed until the present, when the groom was led to the church on crutches amidst the continued acclamation of upwards of 400 spectators who were assembled in the churchyard.
100 years ago, 1912. At a dinner given to the ex-mayor on November the 9th, Councillor Holderway mentioned that he had had a clock made out of some of the timber taken from the town clock when it was repaired a little while ago. The ex-mayor's clock may now be seen at Mr. Arthur J. Sharp's shop in Parchment Street. Known as a grandfather clock, its case from the old oak beam has been very nicely made and artistically carved by Mr. A. E. Shaw, having on it the city arms. And there was a letter to the editor at that time, which said, "A few days ago, I walked with a little dog through a field where 30 or so sheep were grazing. As soon as they saw my companion, they stopped to gaze. Then the bravest advanced until half a dozen yards from the dog, and behind him came his brethren, huddled together in a compact battalion. But the dog held his ground and uttered a succession of sharp barks, and finally ran at the sheep, who scattered and fled."
50 years ago, 1962. At least 100 villages in Hampshire would welcome the chance to improve their roads and footpaths, Mr. A.J. Greenwell, HCC solicitor, told a compulsory purchase inquiry at King Somborne last week. And particularly if their main roads were anything like the A3057 through King Somborne, which has been responsible for the majority of 14 accidents in the last 3 years. He was referring to the scheme to improve the A3057 by widening the carriageway, constructing a longer footpath and ironing out dangerous bends. The second item, despite heavy sleet, a large number of people left their warm firesides to see and to listen to The True Mystery of the Nativity, presented by Romsey Abbey Drama Group on Wednesday. The play, by James Kirkup, was adapted and translated from the French medieval mystery cycle of Arnoul and Simon Grébon. Its producer is Mr. Eugene Wellesley Parkin.
And we are going to have the general news for you now. And the first item will be read by Jerry.
Bid to stop virus spreading. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital is warning relatives to limit visits to patients over the festive period to stop the spread of norovirus. The winter bug causes diarrhoea and vomiting in people of all ages, and Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust is asking that patients' families restrict visits to one per day. A spokesman said, "There are currently high levels of norovirus in the community and some cases in the hospital. Restricting visiting helps reduce the chance of spreading the infection." Visiting hours are limited to between 6:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. unless there are exceptional circumstances which must be approved by nurses. For more details, visit nhs.uk/conditions/norovirus.
Police warning to be extra vigilant for festive criminals. Police have warned Winchester residents to be extra vigilant against crime over Christmas. Speaking at a Partnership and Communities Together, PACT, meeting in Hairstock last week, officers said they were running several campaigns to increase awareness of crime. A major problem is pickpockets operating in busy shopping areas. PC Robin Tebb said, "We have had problems with people following others about and are waiting for an opportunity. What's very popular today is someone spilling something on you and then someone else stealing your wallet while the other is cleaning you up." He said people should always zip up purses and wallets and keep them out of sight. Police are also encouraging residents to leave upstairs lights on when leaving their homes to ward off potential burglars. PC Tebb said, "A burglar is looking for an opportunity to get into a property and when it's dark, they will more likely choose a place that which does not have a light on. Light bulbs these days are efficient and cheap to run, and much cheaper than it will cost to sort out your home insurance. Police also warned motorists to take all valuables with them when leaving their vehicles.
An item here which is headed Praise for Watch Coordinator Derek. Police chiefs have paid a glowing tribute to a Winchester resident following his resignation as Neighbourhood Watch Coordinator. Derek Harper, 79, pictured below, and I will describe that to you in a moment, helped cut crime after setting up the watch in the St John's area of the city 6 years ago. Speaking at a recent meeting of coordinators, Chief Inspector James Fulton, Winchester and East Hampshire District Commander, said, "Derek, you are recognised for your fantastic support for Neighbourhood Watch. There is no doubt your efforts have helped reduce crime in Winchester and St John's and made it a safer place to live." Mr Harper, who lives at St John's South with his wife Triona, also 79, said he has seen great changes in his area. He cited the establishment of St John's as a no-cold calling zone and a reduction in antisocial behaviour as particularly rewarding achievements. Mr Harper has officially resigned but will continue his involvement with the watch until a replacement coordinator is found. And Derek is pictured here, very proudly holding an imposing certificate acknowledging his achievements.
Aubrey hangs up his scissors after 40 years. A Winchester hairdresser is retiring after more than 50 years in the city. Aubrey Monaghan started cutting hair in Winchester 53 years ago as a 16-year-old apprentice, earning £1 per week for the André Bernard firm. Now Aubrey, who's 68, and his wife Barbara are selling up their Southgate Street salon, Aubrey at Marcia Gray, to enjoy their retirement. He said, "With immense regret, my wife and I have decided it's time to retire. I love Winchester, and Winchester has been good to me, and I have always tried to give something back to the city." Aubrey came to Winchester from Ireland aged 4 and got his start when his mother paid 100 guineas for his apprenticeship. He went on to work for Marcia Gray before taking over her business 35 years ago, working in Parchment Street before he bought his current building. He said, "We're a bit of an institution in Winchester. I have clients who have been coming here for nearly 50 years on a regular basis. Some of the ladies are bereft that we are closing. There are other hairdressers out there, but coming here is like a social event for them, almost like a club. There's a family feeling here." He added, "Hairstyles have got very casual these days, as fashion has always been driven by the young. We cater to the slightly older lady, what we call the over 21 club, and we have a niche in the market. We offer something traditional." Aubrey said he wanted to hand the business over to a young hairdresser, but was unable to find anyone suitable. "The business closes on December the 22nd, and the building has been sold to an interior designer. Aubrey and Barbara are looking to move to Surrey to be closer to their family."
Homecoming debut for Panto star. A Winchester actress is treading the boards in her first professional show in this year's Theatre Royal Christmas pantomime. Hannah Jackson, 24, moved to London earlier this year to break into acting and dancing, but has found her first taste of success closer to home. She said, "It's nice to have work, and even better that it's here. It's great for me because I get to see my little sister Katie, who is 3, who loves singing with me." Hannah grew up in Sutton Scotney, attending South Wanston Primary School and Henry Beaufort Secondary, before studying music and dance at Peter Simmons College. She then went on to study dance at Bird College in Sidcup, Kent. She said, "I had a deal with my dad that if I went and got my A-levels, I could go on to dancing. Bird College has a great reputation and it's a very good place to train. There's a difference between a trained dancer and a dancer, and I found it a real struggle at first, but I came out of the other side and liked what I achieved." Hannah has some experience on cruise ships, but her biggest break was when she was chosen to dance in the NHS tribute at the London Olympic opening ceremony. She said, "It was incredible, and I was very lucky to be in a small percentage of dancers chosen." But Hannah said, "Luck is the main factor in having success in show business, particularly in London." She added, "If you can become a name, then it's not a problem. But there's a ridiculous level of competition, and there are more and more dance colleges with big intakes." Hannah is also choreographer for the Winchester production and has taught the dances to the child cast every weekend over the past few months. Aladdin opened on Wednesday of this week at the Theatre Royal and runs until Sunday, January the 6th. And the article is illustrated by a photograph of the cast of the Theatre Royal's Aladdin, including actress Hannah Jackson, in rehearsals at the City Church in Jury Street.
Ladies' Treat for Villagers. A group of ladies have stirred themselves again to raise money for a Hampshire church. The Heavenly Stirrers have been making their secret recipe Christmas puddings in aid of All Saints Church in Barton Stacey since 1996. The 20 ladies' puddings and desserts are so popular that the church now benefits from sales of around £1,000 a year. They've even been enjoyed as far afield as Paris, America, and Australia. The venture was the idea of Jenny Briscoe, a former resident of the village. When she moved away, she entrusted the recipe to Denise Goodall, who now masterminds the process of shopping, weighing, preparing, soaking, mixing, baking, wrapping and selling. The operation begins each year in April, and the puddings come in both small and large sizes. They are on sale in the village shops at Barton Stacey and Long Parish. There's a very nice photograph of seven of the ladies wearing most colourful aprons and holding their basins of Christmas pudding.
Prince knows his jags. A Winchester City councillor had a royal good time last week. Councillor Robert Humby was asked to introduce former mayors of Winchester to His Royal Highness Prince Michael of Kent after the prince welcomed the King's Royal Hussars home at a military parade through the High Street. But he ended up having a conversation with him about one of his favourite cars. Speaking at an Oslebury Parish Council meeting on Monday, Councillor Humby said, "As a city councillor, I have good days and bad days. Last week, I was asked to introduce the line to Prince Michael, so I had to remember all the information of who was mayor and when. I did present them all one by one, but I spent the next 10 minutes speaking to him about Jaguars, and afterwards he came up to me and said thanks very much for the chat. Now that's what I call a good day."
Beware bin scam. Councils have warned residents to beware bogus bin men asking for cash. It follows reports that some residents have been approached by strangers claiming to be dustmen and asking for Christmas tips. They have been seen wearing high-visibility vests, claiming to work for waste contractors Biffer, which collects refuse on behalf of Winchester and East Hampshire councils. refuse collectors across both districts are forbidden to approach residents to ask for any cash or gifts, or else face disciplinary action, including dismissal.
Grant to help air ambulance keep flying. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has been awarded a £5,000 grant from the Santander Foundation. A member of staff from Santander nominated the charity following the death of one of their colleagues in a car accident, although her boyfriend survived thanks to the air ambulance. The air ambulance requires £125,000 each month in order to continue flying. The Santander Foundation provides grants of £5,000 with the Santander Community Plus programme, which can be used to cover salary costs, equipment and materials, and is open to small UK charities or local projects of national charities. Chief Executive of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, John Perry, said, "We are grateful to the Santander Foundation for giving us access to this generous grant. We receive no government funding for operations, relying entirely on the generosity of the people and businesses of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight to keep the air ambulance flying and saving lives."
Simon in his element. A popular disc jockey swapped decks for desks as he paid a visit to Test Valley School, Stockbridge. Radio 2 Drive Time show presenter Simon Mayo spoke to scores of pupils from Year 7 and Year 9 about his latest children's novel, Itch. The story tells the tale of the title character, an accident-prone, science-mad 14-year-old whose explosive hobby is collecting the elements of the periodic table. When he discovers a new element, things take a turn for the dangerous. After the presentation, youngsters questioned the radio host about his experience as an author and life as a presenter. Simon later dedicated a Rolling Stones track to Test Valley School on his regular evening show. Louisa Hiscock, head teacher, said, "We've had a number of author visits recently and were delighted to welcome Simon to the school. We encourage our pupils to read as much as possible, and such a visit is undoubtedly inspirational. We refurbished our school library recently and hope even more pupils will now be encouraged to make use of this resource." And the article is illustrated by a photograph of Simon Mayo making a point to his audience.
Santa visit to boost school. A Winchester primary school is set for a boost when Father Christmas visits a local pub on December the 22nd. Santa will be at the Ship Inn on Wales Street from midday, handing out presents to children. Tickets cost £3.50 per child, with £1.50 going to Winnall Primary School. That evening, the pub will host a fundraising party for the school. Any child who wishes to send a letter can send it addressed to Father Christmas, the Ship Inn, 3 Wales Street, Winchester, SO230ET, or hand it in directly. Anyone wishing to visit Santa on December the 22nd should call Rob Plunton on 01962 809834 to book in advance to make sure Santa brings enough presents for everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And those are the regular features chosen for you this week, and concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extract as well. There is an increasingly strong Christmas flavour, I think. But before we finish, it is my pleasure to pass a special message on to you from the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester. They have sent their very, very best wishes for the season to the listeners of the Winchester Talking Newspaper. Just a reminder that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems at all with your recording. I'll give you her number one more time. It is 01962 862 826. And can I just say that in your wallet this week, you might find a green memory stick instead of the usual red. There isn't any difference at all in the function or content between the two colours, so please just use the stick in your Sapphire player as normal. And we say thanks to our editors, Jean and Fernan Gardner and Irene Dowding. And thank you also to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And for the last time in 2012, our readers and I will say to you, Claire?
Bye-bye. Merry Christmas.
Robin?
Bye-bye and a happy Christmas.
And Jerry?
Goodbye and a very happy Christmas.
And from me, Roz, goodbye and happy Christmas. And a happy and healthy new year are the wishes from all of us. And, well, have a good week. And would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. And that is us for now. So thank you very much for listening. We have just finished checking the tracks on this recording of the Hampshire Chronicle this week and find that there are irregularities. Some tracks have been reordered and one or two tracks are missing. This has been a technical error for which we give you our sincere apologies. We are going to obviously put the thing right and hopefully next week you will get a full and correct recording. Please accept our apologies again and thank you for your patience.